have, the people know that they don't have the personal protective equipment that they need. They know that they don't have what it would take to, you know, treat people with dignity and compassion. And, you know, it's a very frightening thing. I've lived through, you know, situations like that. And, you know, the earthquake in Haiti, when you know you just don't have what you need to help people survive. And it's frightening, you know, and it's demoralizing.
That note, we want to say thank you so much to Dr. Paul Farmer, infectious disease doctor, medical anthropologist, founder of Partners in Health, professor at Harvard Medical School. This is Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Burke, Renee Fell, Sarah Mate, Nermin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Afa, Fani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
The time is now 5 p.m. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor La Peña Flamenca de Portland on Friday, August 22nd. This month, co-sponsor La Peña Flamenca de Portland presents El Cuadro Gallo. Featuring Christina Lawrence, accompanied by Jeffrey Trapp on guitar, Paul Brady on cante, Nick Hutch on cajon, and Brenna McDonald on palmas. Again, that's La Peña Flamenca de Portland and El Cuadro Gallo on Friday, August 22nd at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor
Negative Lounge.
Performing live Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
We got so much power.
How many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Since 1980, Negative Land has been creating records, CDs, video, fine arts, books, radio, and live performance using appropriated sounds, images, objects, and text.
Negative Land will be performing with Daniel Mensch and Cascadian Knights. All ages welcome.
Not even funny.
Again, that's Negative Land, Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
and now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Department of Justice files a lawsuit against the corporation Oracle for its failures related to the state's failed healthcare exchange site.
Russian artillery moves into Ukraine.
And journalists are developing a new database with every police shooting in the United States in the last decade.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 22nd, 2014. I'm Paul Rowland.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. A police officer involved in the protest over Michael Brown's death in Ferguson, Missouri, has been relieved of his duty after video surfaced of him describing black people as, quote, little perverts, end quote, and Barack Obama as an illegal immigrant. While being recorded in April, former officer Dan Page also referred to Muslims and gay people, saying, I'm into diversity. I'd kill everybody. End quote. Page is the second St. Louis County officer involved in controversy following the Ferguson protests. Lieutenant Ray Albers was suspended on Wednesday after video emerged of him pointing his assault weapon at protesters and threatening to kill them. In his speech, Page, who claimed to have been a sergeant major in the U.S. Army and a Vietnam War veteran, sharply criticized laws intended to protect minorities from racially motivated hatred and/or to help increase ethnic diversity.
New evidence in the death of Kajimi Powell on Tuesday near Ferguson, Missouri, released on Wednesday, shows two police officers opening fire on him. He is moving slowly and his hands are at his sides. The chief of police originally explained away the shooting by stating the 25-year-old brandished a knife and threatened the two cops. But a cell phone video taken by a bystander shows that Powell's hands were by his sides. The video of the Tuesday killing shows a man in a blue jacket acting erratically and cursing at pedestrians as he paces around a pair of soda cans. Powell had stolen two sodas, then placed them on the ground and waited for the police to show up. His friend was aware of the stolen sodas and came onto the scene to film what would happen. Also present was the store owner and two people, one of whom made a comment pertaining to an apparent plan by Powell to lure the police in front of the camera. Within 11 seconds of arriving on the scene, each of the two officers had fired six shots, emptying their weapons. The police continued to carry on as though Kajimi still lived. One jock cuffed him while the other held a gun on him. Here's a clip from the video of his death after he had been shot and was lying on the ground.
As officers arrived, the suspect turned towards the officers and started to walk towards them, clutching his waistband. He then pulled out a knife in what we described as an overhand grip and told the officer, "Shoot me now, kill me now." As he walked towards the officers began giving him verbal commands, "Drop the knife, step back, drop the knife," at which time the suspect stopped as he was approaching the driver and then turned his attention to this officer that was in the passenger seat. Both officers are out of the car. When they initially got out of the car, they did not have their weapons drawn. When the suspect displayed his knife, they drew their weapons. The officers are giving the suspect verbal commands, "Stop, drop the knife, stop, drop the knife." Suspect moved towards the passenger, the police officer that was in the passenger seat of the vehicle, at which time he came within 3 to 4 feet of the officer, and the officer shot. Both officers fired their weapons, striking the suspect, and the suspect is deceased.
The video also shows more police showing up and aggressively dispersing a large crowd of upset witnesses. The killing of Kajimi Powell on Tuesday has increased the tension around Ferguson, Missouri, where 18-year-old Michael Brown was shot on August 9th while unarmed with his hands in the air. Right-wing media outlets have also fanned the flames by repeating false claims about Michael Brown and citing an anonymous witness who has since been discredited, who made false claims that Michael Brown fought with the officer and punched him in the face before he was shot and killed. That eyewitness was exposed to be a fraud, and actual eyewitnesses have confirmed the fact that was verified by coroner's reports, that Michael Brown was shot while surrendering with his hands in the air. Officer-related violence in Portland keeps growing and growing. This year, there have already been 3 deaths from Portland resident interactions with the police department, but now there's a new tool to track police shootings all across the United States. KBOO's Ryan Katz spoke with the database's founder, Brian Burghardt, editor of the Reno News and Review.
3 deaths in officer-related shootings in the Portland metro area have raised questions as to the police department's best practices. Many outside advocates around the country have been raising questions around the transparency of data on officer-related shootings. D. Brian Burghardt has been assembling a database of all officer-related shootings in the U.S. He says that a nationwide database is much needed.
This is the 21st century. It's a time when every piece of data about individuals, you and me, is being collected and put in a database somewhere. For communities to be unable to compare the rate of people killed by police, being unable to compare that to other cities of similar sizes or similar demographics, it's just unbelievable.
Here's how it works. Burghardt sets up Google Alerts to let him know when a crime has happened in a particular area. He also scans various websites and databases that exist in other metro areas. But perhaps the most fascinating part about the project is that he crowdsources a lot of his data.
There are 17,985 state and local law enforcement agencies. So I knew from the beginning I couldn't do it myself. The crowd is assisting me in finding databases that already exist. And the crowd is adding individual entries, and the crowd is helping fill out the spreadsheet.
This came after Burghardt ran into a few obstacles in obtaining documents from law enforcement agencies. Some of them were a little bit hesitant to release some of the documents that he was looking for.
They just make up rules about what's a public document and what they'll provide and what they won't. If somebody gets shot, often the media covers it. I'm just asking for a list of the people that were killed. I mean, it's that simple.
After Burghardt gets the data, he goes through and fact checks it all. Then he starts to look and see if he can find any trends out of it.
The more urban dense the city is, the more likely black people are to be killed. If it's less urban dense, like a western city, the more likely, say, a brown person is to be killed. And if you get at the very other end of the spectrum, the more likely somebody with mental illness is to be killed. And this mental illness thing is, I mean, it's a huge untold story.
If you want to add any incidents to the website, go to www.fatalencounters.org. For KBOO News, this is Ryan Katz.
The Attorney General of California will appeal a federal court decision that calls the state's death penalty practices unconstitutional. Last month, U.S. District Court Judge Cormac Carney ruled that the state's death penalty is unconstitutional because it takes too long to carry out. Opponents of the death penalty argue that the long and arbitrary delays amount to cruel and unusual punishment. Attorney General Kamala Harris argues that the long process ensures that the defendants receive due process. Death penalty appeals can last decades, and many inmates die of natural causes before they are executed. Since California's current system was adopted 35 years ago, 900 people have been sentenced to death. So far, only 13 have actually been executed.
A Northeast Portland homeowner who moved back into her foreclosed home with the help of community activists 2 years ago was forcibly evicted last night. Alicia Jackson was granted an appeal in May that put a stay on her eviction, but after that stay ran out, she was left without options and has now been removed from her home. Jackson filed a legal challenge against Fox Capital Corporation, who were ruled the rightful owners of Jackson's home. Jackson self-evicted in the summer of 2011 after falling behind on her payments, owing more money than her home was then worth. A coalition of community groups helped Jackson publicly move back into her home on May 1, 2012, as part of a wider anti-foreclosure effort in the city. She has been served with several eviction notices since then and was living without running water for months, since the city of Portland said it would only turn the water back on for the recognized owner, the Fox Capital Corporation. Last May, around 50 people pitched tents in Jackson's yard, located in the 500 block of Northeast Bryant Street, and set up watch duty and worked with her to try to stop the eviction. No activists were present when the sheriffs arrived to evict Jackson from her home late last night.
St. Francis Park on Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland, which has served as a haven for many people in the area, has been sold to Catholic charities. The nonprofit group plans to bulldoze the park and construct a housing development for low-income Portlanders in its place. The park is the only one in the area, and many local residents had been hoping to save the park from the bulldozers. Instead, Catholic Charities Organization has invited the residents to a farewell party for the park on Sunday, August 24th from 4 to 8 p.m. Catholic Charities plans to reserve 25 units for women transitioning out of homelessness or abusive homes through the organization's assistance programs. St. Francis Park has been a popular site for respite among the homeless population for several years. Taking that space away will create a vacuum, which neither the city nor Catholic Charities have any plan to address.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partly sunny with a high of 86. Sunday will see similar temperatures with sunny skies. Today in 1831, a slave named Nat Turner led a rebellion in Virginia, killing between 55 and 65 white plantation owners and workers. On the same day in 1848, the U.S. annexed the area now known as New Mexico from Spain. The quote of the day comes from Huey P. Newton, co-founder of the Black Panther Party, who was shot and killed 25 years ago today. He said, "If you stop struggling, then you stop life."
It's coming right up on 5:15 in the afternoon, and time for a daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
With so many things to worry about in our world, I'm glad that one of my big concerns has finally been resolved. My worry was that, as a global society, we haven't been doing enough to meet the basic needs of the super rich. I'm talking about the 1% of the 1%. They have extra special needs that we commoners never think about, like first-class air travel. Sure, they can buy a first-class ticket, but come on, how special is that, really? Luckily, Etihad Airways in Abu Dhabi has stepped up to meet the crying need to upgrade first-class flying for the upper-uppiest of the elites. Their new A380 Super Jumbo jets include a three-room suite for super swells who want to fly without having to be among us riffraff. The New York Times reports that the 125-square-foot suite, which is tastefully named the Residence, has a living room with two couches, a bedroom with a double bed, and a bathroom with a shower. Plus, you get your own refrigerator and a 32-inch flat-screen TV. Oh, and a butler, who doubles as your private chef. Now that's class. This is not a joke. As Etihad's vice president for guest services puts it, it's not just some wacky idea. There's a market for this. Well, yes, albeit a teeny tiny market. Booking the Residence for the flight from Abu Dhabi to London will set you back about $20,000. One way. Double that if you want to return in style, and who wouldn't? The only problem is that the flight to London is only 6.5 hours. So little time to watch TV, have chef do up a gourmet dinner, sack out, shower, and, well, chances are you won't have time to enjoy both of those couches. This is Jim Hightower saying, still, it's the sense of being treated in the pampered manner you deserve that makes it all worthwhile. So at least, that's one thing we can scratch off our list of worries.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Today, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation decided to boost releases of clean water from the Lewiston Dam into the Klamath River in southwest Oregon and northern California. The effort will try to avoid a recurrence of the incident in 2002 that killed tens of thousands of adult salmon in the river. With low water levels, disease was able to spread quickly through the bunch salmon. A severe drought in the area has created conditions with low and warm water conditions that mirror the large-scale fish kill of O2. The area hosts three American Indian tribes, all of which depend on the salmon population for subsistence. The extra release of water this year will likely mean less for next year. While pleased with the intervention, spokeswoman for the Hoopa Valley tribe, Danielle Vigil-Maston, urged the federal government to institute more sustainable long-term solutions.
Mudslides in Washington state have damaged homes and closed sections of Highway 20 and Highway 153. Heavy rain on Thursday washed down hillsides left bare by wildfires. So far, there have been no reports of injuries. Details from the area have been sparse because phone and radio towers were knocked out by wildfires earlier this summer. Crews came out Friday morning to assess damage and start the recovery effort. Thunderstorms are expected in the area through Friday evening.
Today marks 5 months since a massive mudslide destroyed the small town of Oso, Washington. The mudslide was traced to overlogging in the area above the town, some of which was illegal. But 5 months later, overlogging continues in many parts of Washington. And as KABU reporter Jenka Soderbergh discovered while talking to a resident of the Olympic Peninsula, the billionaire Koch brothers may be hoping to get in on the action.
I am speaking now with Stacy Chastain. She's from Forks, Washington, and recently, Stacy, you saw a small plane come into your town and found out that it was registered to George Koch Sons, LLC. And I wonder if you could talk about what you saw and how you know that the plane was registered to the Koch brothers-connected company, George Koch Sons, LLC.
Well, actually, I was on my way out of town, and I noticed an unusually nice aircraft at our really small airport. And so I didn't have time to stop and take a picture of it because it was such an anomaly. but I ended up calling a friend of mine, and she did, and she looked up the tail fin number, and it was registered to George Koch's son.
And what were the executives or whoever was on that plane doing there in Forks? Did you see them? Did you see what they were doing in your town?
I didn't see them. As soon as I found out it was the Koch brothers, of course, I started doing some digging and trying to figure out what was going on in town and why they would possibly be here. And then after talking to a few people, I found out that also there were some executives from Rainier Inc., and I'm sure everybody knows they're a large timber owner in this area, and the executives from that corporation were in town at the exact same time. And I know that Rainier has been liquidating a lot of its assets, as well as logging very, very vast amounts of their properties.
So Rainier is the seventh largest private timber owner in the United States, owns over 2.3 million acres in many parts of the U.S. and is now based in Florida. What kind of land do they own there on the Olympic Peninsula, and what's happening with it?
A lot of property up here. They're one of the major timber owners. Aside from, I believe that they are the second highest on this area, second only to the Department of Natural Resources. And they are just logging the heck out of everything. I mean, the logging in this area hasn't been like this since the 80s, since the 70s and 80s, when they just logged everything down to nothing. So, and I do know that Rainier recently also liquidated a lot of its international assets, like in New Zealand and Chile and some of the other places that they used to own property. So ultimately, you know, of course, I fear for the fact that the Koch brothers were in town and Rainier is liquidating assets. You know, are they going to try and acquire assets on the Olympic Peninsula? And then where's that going to leave us?
What's some of the impact of logging in your area there in Forks, which, if people don't know, is in northwest part of the Olympic Peninsula?
Well, you know, logging is a part of this community. It's why this community exists. And you know, and we always try to find a balance between the environment and harvesting a natural resource. And, you know, up until just recently, you know, it's been a pretty steady trend of logging in this area. And then all of a sudden, it's just sort of gone straight up. I mean, there's more people logging now. I mean, people entering the logging industry than have in decades. And so, I mean, you know, of course, the impacts are going to be, you know, they're going to be devastating to everything from famine to elk populations and, I mean, anything that isn't in the forest.
And today actually marks 5 months since the mudslide in Oso, Washington, which occurred on March 22nd, 2014. Uh-huh. And that also has been traced to unstable and illegal logging practices in that area, and I wonder if you see any parallels there, or if you have any fears that what happened in Oso could happen in other parts of Washington.
You know, every year we have, you know, something happened. The good thing about where we live is that the ground isn't really unstable, and our biggest thing is our waterways. Every year we have people drown in kayaks because log jams, you know, people are trying to stabilize these unstable portions of the river, and they put in log jams to try and do it, and then people drown in them. So yeah, I mean, I do fear for you know, things that are secondary impacts from logging, whether they be landslides or just trying to repair the damage that somebody else has done.
Well, thanks so much. And we're going to continue to cover this story and to try and find out more about what is going on and why George Koch Sons LLC has an interest in visiting the small town of Forks, Washington, in conjunction with some executives from Rainier Timber Company. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stacy Chastain from Forks, Washington.
All right, thanks.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
And in Hiroshima, Japan, earlier this week, a deadly landslide buried dozens of people following a heavy rainfall. A hillside collapsed so quickly that many could not outrun the deluge of mud and heavy boulders that began with a thunderous noise. So far, rescuers found around 40 people buried in the rubble, and 50 or more remain unaccounted for. Recovery efforts have been complicated by the continuing rain. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe faces major criticisms from his critics because he continued to play golf instead of dealing with the situation.
The Oregon Department of Justice has filed a lawsuit against Oracle America, accusing them of fraud, false claims, breach of contract, and civil racketeering. 2 weeks ago, Oracle filed its own claim in federal court, accusing Oregon of mismanagement and demanding $3 million. The company blames the state for not hiring a, quote, systems integrator to oversee their work. The state refutes this claim, saying the decision not to hire an integrator came from Oracle. The state's lawsuit levels numerous allegations at Oracle. It claims that Oracle misled the state into entering $100 million contracts for products and services that failed to perform as promised. It goes on to say that Oracle overcharged for incompetent personnel, hid the poor quality of their work, and refused to honor its warranty to fix errors. The lawsuit specifically names Oracle employees, including President and Chief Financial Officer Safra Katz.
The Microsoft Corporation has announced that it is cutting ties with the American Legislative Exchange Council, known by its acronym ALEC. Microsoft is just the latest in a series of corporations who have dropped ties to ALEC, including Coca-Cola, General Motors, Bank of America, and Procter & Gamble. Microsoft's decision is believed to be connected to its announced commitment to the environment and alternative energy. The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, is a conservative public-private lobbying group that has worked to undermine environmental protection, workers' rights, and public education. Microsoft had previously been a member of ALEC's Communications and Technology Task Force. In a statement, the company said it has halted all participation in this group. According to advocacy organization Common Cause, a number of companies began cutting ties with ALEC after it was revealed in 2011 that the lobbying group had secretly pushed legislation for restrictive voter ID requirements, anti-union measures, and proposals to block renewable energy development. ALEC was also behind the controversial Stand Your Ground law, which was used as a defense by Florida resident George Zimmerman in his shooting of unarmed black teenager Trayvon Martin last year.
States that have enacted Stand Your Ground laws have seen increases in homicides, according to study from the American Bar Association. The ABA study also found that the laws have no effect in deterring crime and affect minorities in a disproportionate numbers. In Stand Your Ground states, cases where the shooter is white and the victim is black are ruled justified homicides 40% of the time, but that number shrinks to just 5% when the victim is white and the shooter is black. Back in 2005, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, began pushing the legislative model for Stand Your Ground across the nation with help from the National Rifle Association. Those laws currently exist in 33 states in some form and remove the duty to retreat and also legally allows the deadly use of force. The way the laws are written leaves the threat of death and the need for self-defense largely in the eye of the beholder. The ABA study isn't the first to find such increases in homicide rates. A Texas A&M study 2 years ago found that the number of homicides spiked 8% after states enacted Stand Your Ground laws. Christopher Jenks, an assistant professor of law at Southern Methodist University, points out that the law gives armed civilians more leniency when using guns in public than a soldier has in combat. So far, no one has tried to repeal or modify the laws for the sake of public safety. The ABA report states these laws give people the misconception that they are free to use deadly force in public areas. It called for states to repeal or refuse to enact Stand Your Ground legislation.
60,000 people have signed onto a lawsuit against Facebook in the European Court of Justice, challenging the company's privacy policies. An Austrian law student started the lawsuit against Facebook and is urging all Facebook users to join him. Max Schrems claims that Facebook routinely violates the privacy of its users and misleads users into thinking that they have more control over their privacy protections than they actually do. The lawsuit has passed its first legal review in which Facebook users can be considered as a class. He is hoping that each Facebook user will get around $600 in damages if his lawsuit is successful. More information on the class action lawsuit can be found at the website fbclaim.com. KBOA.com.
Gunmen stormed a mosque in central Iraq and killed over 50 Sunni worshippers today. Reports indicate the attack was revenge for an assassination attempt on a local Shiite leader. According to security officials, three roadside bombs exploded near the Shiite leader's motorcade, killing five. A few hours later, several armed men surrounded the mosque, shot the worshippers within, and refused to let ambulances attend to the wounded. The gunmen are believed to be Shiite. The rise of the Islamic State and its acceptance by some Sunni populations has reignited sectarian violence across Iraq. Shiites and religious minorities such as Christians and Yazidis have faced violence from the Islamic State, and many have been forced to flee their homes. Right now, there are 2.8 million internally displaced people in Iraq.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Lisa King and Henry Leisha. The producer is Ryan Katz. Our engineer is Ian Gadbury. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. If you'd like to call your elect